Yes, time to talk Premier League on the global game and so much to get through with Spencer Pryor. Evening, Treacle.
Evening, Cocker. How are you doing?
Cocker. Okay. I'll take that. Very good. Broski's here as well, of course. Now, Broski said it was time for Nuno Espirito Santo to be sacked, which, of course, he was by Tottenham. Do you concur with that? And what do you make of Antonio Conte being appointed as his replacement? Right move?
Oh, very much so. But I don't know what Tottenham expected getting him in the first place. It was a very, you know, he had a certain way of playing with Wolves that he wasn't going to come in and suddenly play a different way, right? So I don't think the players responded super well. But grabbing Conte before Man United could get their dirty claws on him, I think was a great move by Tottenham. And so the biggest thing, I mean, all he's got to try and do is really, if he can get Son and Harry Kane fired up, then I think that's going to be the key for him. But he's got a magnificent reputation and he had great results in England before. So it's a great appointment, but 18 months is a weird contract.
Yeah.
So time will tell.
Just on the Harry Kane thing, that's obviously his big conundrum. To get the best out of Harry Kane and to maybe refocus his head on Tottenham. Do you think he can do that or is Harry mentally already elsewhere?
No, look, I think he'll try. I think anyone who's going in there, that's going to be part of the challenge, is managing players off the pitch as well. And he did a magnificent job with that with Chelsea. So I think managing players and egos and getting them motivated is a skill in itself, and I think he'll be able to do it. It's just whether, look, if Harry Kane doesn't want to do it, he won't keep him around, and he'll be gone skiing the January window, because I think that's going to be part of it, is his control of who plays and who's at the club. Even though it's only an 18-month contract, you know, Harry Kane is so critical to Tottenham's success this year that, you know, after the Euros, it took a bit of time for him to get going again. And obviously the speculation with Man City, he started scoring goals, and getting him going again will be the biggest challenge. But I think he'll be able to do it.
Yeah, I think so. Do you think then in bringing in someone like Conte, I mean, will they invest in January when the window comes around? Someone like him has some massive pulling power when it comes to players.
Yeah.
And that could turn Harry Kane's head into, you know, focusing and actually wanting to stay rather than looking when he's going to leave. Do you think bringing in someone like Conte, do you think they'll invest in January?
Do you know what, Broski? As I said, going back to the 18-month contract, it's a weird one how much autonomy they do give him to bring players in, because if they're his players and he's got that shorter contract, if he leaves, then you have the legacy. I mean, it's like bringing Sam Allardyce in, right? You finish up with a Sam Allardyce-type squad. Which you don't want that legacy for your team. So Conte's going to have that reputation to bring great players in, but are Tottenham going to give him that scope and autonomy to do that with such a short contract? It's going to be, January's going to be really interesting, isn't it, in terms of who he does bring in, what he does, where he thinks they need strengthening, or is he just going to try and, are the club going to say to him, well, you've got what you've got, go with that and see how you go?
Now, you mentioned Manchester United, and they were obviously linked with Antonio Conte as well before he went to Tottenham. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer remains in place. They've got the Manchester derby coming up at the weekend. If they lose that, no doubt the guns will be out again for Ole. But one big potential target is now off their radar. Are they almost stuck with Solskjaer? I mean, they might be happy to be, I don't know, but are they almost stuck with him now? I mean, there's Zinedine Zidane, of course, who's sort of still floating around as a possibility, but
it is still one of the biggest jobs in world football, right? So I don't think they'll be stuck with him, and I don't think a defeat against Man City is going to be the end of him. I think a performance like they played last week or the week before against Liverpool at home, that would be a key, right? So they reacted really well in the week, winning Champions League. They had a great win against a very mediocre Tottenham. I think a poor performance and a lethargic performance is something that will be a bigger concern for Man United. If they go out and they have a go, and then I think they might keep him. But I don't think they're forced into keeping him now just because their number one target's gone. It's still a big job, yeah. Very big job. Mm-hmm. And I think if there's that complacency on the pitch again and what looks like divided camp, then I think that will be the cue for them to make the change.
It is the silly season in England. Newcastle, of course, parted company with Steve Bruce, yep. the new Saudi owners. For a long time, over the last week or so, it appeared as though Unai Emery was their anointed one, but it looks as though he's going to turn them down and stay at Villarreal in Spain, where he's done very well, yep. of course, saying that the owners lack a clear vision. It's all a bit confusing. Who are Newcastle going to end up with? It looks as though they might go back to Paulo Fonseca. Lucien Favre is still being talked about. Who do you think is the right man for the tune?
Well, the thing that I've been reading was Eddie Howe, right?
Yep.
So it was Emery or Eddie Howe, and very, very different ways that they want to approach playing, recruitment. And I think that lack of clarity at the top, you know, they've come in as owners, right? And you would think they'll come in with a really clear strategy of recruitment process, playing style, what do they want to do? But when they've put I'm speculating that they've put stuff out publicly of their targets because they've come in and they want to show that they're going for big names. So by going for so many different big names with different philosophies and way that they want to play and approach recruitment, that's the lack of clarity that I think concerned Emery. They would leave Villarreal, where he's gone in there and he's making, it's his hometown, he's Spanish. It was a big thing for him to go, "Now look, I'm not interested." And with the budget that someone going in would have, that was the concern was, well, who are you going to bring in? Play, you know, how do you want us to play? Are you going to be bringing players in, or am I going to be given autonomy to bring players in? I think that was a bigger concern. So we constantly see the merry-go-round of managers, but he's in a secure job now, and he's committed to a long-term project in Spain. So you wouldn't want to walk away from something like that into an environment where you might last 6 months or a season and then get punted again. Yeah. So Eddie Howe seems to be the favourite.
Yeah. This is interesting for me, Spanner, because we seem to be hearing this an awful lot at the moment about managers who are not necessarily in control of A, the transfer budget, or B, even the players that they're bringing into their clubs. We heard a lot about that at Manchester United as well, and one or two other clubs. Is this very much the modern way? Because I'm sure when you were playing, I'm pretty sure anyway, that if you had a manager, he was basically the guy in charge. He was the guy who dealt with the hiring and firing. But it seems to be not the case these days. Why is that?
Well, we're seeing more clubs getting head coaches in, right? So Arteta at Arsenal is you're essentially responsible for you'd give a shortlist as a manager or as a head coach. You'd give a shortlist of players that you would like to bring in, but it shouldn't be for the manager to be the one that's involved in negotiations or you know. You're responsible for coaching a team. And managing players off the pitch. In terms of who's going to come in, you can give a shortlist now, and this is the way the game's going. You provide a shortlist of people that you would like to the director of football, and then it becomes that person's responsibility to go away and actually do the negotiations, and hopefully they get the ones on the shortlist. I don't think we're seeing situations where players are coming in that the head coaches or managers haven't agreed to. But there's such a big thing now with players getting so much money that the management of players off the pitch is a job in itself, as well as coaching players to go out and win games. They shouldn't be involved in the whole process of negotiating contracts. And that's the game's moved beyond that now, really has.
Definitely has, yeah. I mean, Simon, you asked me why I don't want to coach, and that's exactly why. Mate. I'm getting grey hairs just thinking about all that. Look, Spano, to the other side of the table, mate. Yep. And Liverpool is obviously the club that I support. Do you think, looking at, you know, they dropped points at home to Brighton the other day, a big result last night over Atletico Madrid at home. Do you think they have the squad and the depth to manage all the cups, Premier League, Champions League, and end up winning, you know, taking out some trophies?
Settle down, mate. No one's ever won a trophy in November.
No, obviously not. And that's why I'm asking. I think, you know,
I know I think you Liverpool fans love it, and but no one's ever won anything in November. It's a marathon, not a sprint, as the old saying goes. So, look, if they can keep Van Dijk fit, then they've got a chance. And something happens when he's fit in terms of the confidence that the players have around him. They look significantly more secure defensively, which gives a lot of players freedom to go and be more attacking. And I just think he's a key to their success. In terms of fitness-wise, but of course they've got the depth. They've got the budget, so there's no excuses for that. But yeah, they'll be there or thereabouts again. And I mean, they've got a great manager that looks pretty comfortable, and he's not looking at anything else. So of course Liverpool will be there or thereabouts, mate. You'll be fine at the end of the season, whether you win anything, Broski. I think there's a I think Chelsea are way stronger this year than they were before. Man City, I still think, are super strong. So, you know, we'll be looking at those teams to be in and around Liverpool challenging. And, yeah, they'll be there or thereabouts, mate.
Let's finish off, Spinner, with a look ahead to the Premier League games of the weekend, or at least two of the big ones. West Ham take on Liverpool at the Olympic Stadium Monday morning, Australian time. Peter Drury, renowned commentator, saying they're embedded in the top four during his commentary last week. They're 3 points clear of United. And, of course, before that, Saturday night, 11:30 p.m. Australia time. Can't wait for this one. It's the Manchester derby at Old Trafford. How do you see those two games going?
West Ham is, David Moyes, he's proven it wasn't a one-season wonder for him to the success he's created and the environment at West Ham. I mean, there were 60,000 there watching the cup game against Man City in the week. The fans are loving it at West Ham. Antonio's back fit again now. He's a key for them as well. As you know, he's such a threat up front. It'll be a tough game for Liverpool. I think we'll see West Ham sitting and soaking up as much pressure. They're not going to give space in behind. They'll be concerned, obviously, about Liverpool's threat speed-wise up front. I think West Ham could get a draw out of that. They could even go on and win it, but that's going to be really tough. The Manchester derby, anything can happen in the derby games, right? And Ollie's team do have a point to prove, given the debacle that was the last home game. The fans are going to be super nervous in that. And the first 25 minutes is going to be key for that game. If Man City get a foothold on the game and start dominating with the ball, the natives will get restless. And it's an interesting place to play, Old Trafford, right there. It's a really quiet ground. The fans are weird, eh? It's not one of those scary stadiums to go and play in. And if Man City get on top and get control of the games, they'll turn quite quickly to Man United supporters, I think.
Oh, so
first 25 minutes of that game is going to be... First 25 minutes, Simon, will be critical in terms of, you know, if Man City get a goal, like Liverpool did a couple of weeks ago in the first 5 minutes, the stadium will get hushed up and then the players will feel the pressure. they stay in the game, then anything can happen.
Fascinating weekend of Premier League football ahead. Spencer, as ever, thank you for your time. We'll speak to you again soon. Cheers, Treacle.
Thanks, Ben.
Take care, guys. See ya. See ya, boys.
That's Spencer Pryor talking about the Premier League, which, of course, is on Optus Sport. And after this short break, we'll be talking to Michelle Escobar of Optus Sport about the women's game.